ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
For well over a century, Hollywood has been such a dominant cultural force on the planet. It ebbs and flows. These days the cinemas may be contracting, but we've got the endless phenomenon of the streaming services. Now, while there's been a boom in the need for scripts, TV writer producers, they're not making the money they should and used to make. Since May the 2nd, some 11,000 writers, downing pens and closing laptops to go on strike about their conditions. And if you head to LA or New York, you'll almost certainly see a picket line. All sorts of shows have been closed down. To learn more, we're joined by Kate Trumbull, an assistant professor of entertainment and media studies at the University of Georgia. Kate is also the author of a book about Hollywood labor issues, including, well, books plural, including Below the Stars, How Labor of Working Actors and Extras Shapes Production. The writers bargain with the studios every year, of course, but this time it's down tools. Why did the strike? What triggered the strike on May the 2nd, Kate?
Well, I think one way to really look at this is that this has been kind of bubbling for a while. So when you read the Hollywood trade magazines, they'll always start at the beginning, sort of before negotiations. You'll start reading, like, you know, writers are they're trying to increase residuals and they're trying to get a better rate and they might go on strike. And so there's always this kind of lead up. So before 2020, there was some lead up. A lot of people were expecting the writers to go on strike in March, April 2020. Of course, we all know that, you know, nothing went as planned in 2020. And so when all production shut down because of a pandemic, you can't really shut down production as a writer, right? You don't have that kind of strike power. So all of these issues have been really bubbling up. So it was always kind of clear that these were going to be particularly fraught negotiations, especially because of these residuals or payments for reuse of material on streaming.
My guest is Kate Trumbull. The writers last went on strike big time 15 years ago. It seems more recent than that. What's changed in the industry since then?
So I think one of the things that's kind of interesting is on some level they are striking for similar things. So residual for replaying material on digital platforms. What's really changed over the past 15 years is how much content, essentially, how many TV shows, kind of films made straight for Netflix and whatnot. So the real volume of things that need to be made to fill our kind of insatiable demand for constant new things, right? So I will say I get a little overwhelmed with the amount of new things, but some people want to watch a new show or a new movie every week, right? And these streaming services are really trying to fulfill those demands. So I think what's really changed is the amount of shows and films. Those budgets have gone down because they need to make a lot, so they can't spend a ton of money on them. And they figured out ways to spend less money by taking that out of the, I guess, bank accounts of the people who are really making these shows, right? The writers, the actors, the directors.
Kate, I understand some of the issues. Others I find a bit bewildering. I take your point about the residuals problem. But for Netflix and some of those other streaming companies, the foreign market is hugely important. Are the writers able to access some of that cash flow?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's one of the things. That's actually one of the things that they are bargaining for right now. Is they get foreign residuals, but like domestic U.S. residuals, those are quite low. So really, one of the main things they are trying to do is raise those rates, so that they are able to take advantage of those foreign residuals. I mean, that market, if you think about it, 15 years, I agree, 2007-8 feels like it was yesterday, but we didn't have streaming. Certainly, we didn't have this kind of global presence of Netflix. And people in the U.S., I would say, largely weren't watching as many and didn't really have as much access to shows that weren't in English. So that boom has really happened in the last 15 years. And at this point, writers are just trying to catch up.
What is a mini room?
So a mini room, this is one of these terms and big changes that has happened in the past 15 years. So mini rooms are essentially writers' rooms that are formed before a show is greenlit. So Netflix will kind of ask a group of writers to come in and essentially map out or break the entire show. And get a lot of that show written, then they'll greenlight it, and then they'll have sort of fewer people maybe finishing it off. So one of the problems with that structure is the way writers are paid is basically, you know, based on a certain amount of weeks that they have to work on a show, and then they're then paid to write episodes for the show. So they're usually used to getting sort of episodic fees associated with writing. So this is essentially cutting down the amount of time, giving them less time to really kind of cook the ideas and, you know, think things through, and pay them significantly less. And for those who are starting, it's really hard because they have less time to kind of learn their craft.
As you talk, I remember one of the golden ages of Hollywood when writers were treated like gods, when every famous novelist was invited to Hollywood to, you know, to sit at the table, and they were treated with deference and paid enormously.
Absolutely. And you know, there are still some people who are paid enormously. I think one of the examples that's kind of come out is that Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who created Fleabag and was a writer on Killing Eve, she has a huge Amazon deal, but we haven't seen any shows come out of that. So you have these really elite writers who are making, you know, might be getting these huge deals, but the people who are working and, you know, working kind of day to day, perhaps, and like really writing the things that you're seeing are not necessarily the ones getting paid.
And there are no longer writers who are fully employed by studios or streamers?
No. Some people might have an overall deal, but those kinds of like contract studio deals are no longer.
Okay, what about AI? Are the robots doing some writing?
They're certainly going to. I think one of the things that they're doing, I think it's really easy, I think especially for many of us who are you know, teachers or reading all these articles about how, you know, students are using AI to write papers. We all feel this is like going to happen immediately. So the main thing I think to keep in mind with AI is that writers and also actors and directors aren't going to be replaced immediately, but studios are going to keep and networks are going to explore AI. They're going to think about ways to use it. And what the writers really need and the actors and directors all need is to have it in their contract that they will be able to get a seat at the table and have discussions about how AI will be used so that they aren't fully replaced. So this is really about starting that conversation.
I've got a note here from one of my producers, which I find rather mysterious. You can't copyright anything from AI. Why is that significant?
So it's significant for the studios because they want to own everything, right? They want to own, if they don't own something, it can be kind of taken, used by other people. It can be remade exactly in the same way. It can be, you know, there's no kind of foreign kind of agreement. There oftentimes with shows that are made in one country and transported to another, there are kind of agreements to abide by each other's copyright, even if they don't necessarily have to. So the ideas can just flow anywhere and they can't make money off of it. So they really need ownership in order to make money.
Some of my old friends in the film industry are telling me of the not-too-distant future when AI will not only be writing, it'll be creating the sets, it'll be giving us virtual actors. Heavens above, where will it end? Now, for those that don't realise, how unionised is Hollywood? The short answer is a lot.
Yes. Very much. I mean, that's the unions still kind of run Hollywood in terms of how things are made.
Which are the biggies?
The WGA. So, in terms of the WGA, which is the Writers Guild, are the toughest negotiators. So they're the ones who have gone on strike for film and television the most. They're, I think, probably that they're going to fight for their writers. SAG-AFTRA is enormous. It's over 100,000 members.
That's the Screen Actors Guild, isn't it? And
yes.
Then there's the DGA. What's its purpose?
The DGA is the Directors Guild, so it's not just the directors, like the famous directors, that you would know, right? The Michael Manns and the Wes Andersons, but it's also the unit production managers and the assistant directors who run a lot of the scheduling and the logistics on set. So that's also, I was going to say, some of these numbers have gone down, but used to be around kind of like 15, 20,000 members.
But as you pointed out, the Writers Guild have a history of, being more militant. What's their origins? How did they happen?
That's a good question. I mean, I think a lot of the job of writing is sitting and thinking. I think a lot of this comes from, right, the sort of significance of the blacklist the kind of politicized origins and like fight, you know, having to protect their members or fight for their members.
I'm glad you've raised the blacklist because for many people, they don't even remember what it was. But the attacks on writers in the McCarthy era must have welded them together.
Yeah, and I think for writers, right, if you think about it, they're so essential to what we watch. I think if anyone has been watching Succession, it's a show that's incredibly well written. There's a lot of conversations like on social media about the great writing in that show, but we don't see writers like we do actors, or they might not be doing interviews like directors or showrunners might be doing. So getting credit and advocating for these particularly kind of important creative people, for films and television shows we love, is really important for the union.
Kate, how often have the writers gone on strike over in their history?
This is their sixth. This is their sixth strike. There was an initial sort of strike in the 50s when they were not the Writers Guild, but they're the most kind of willing to strike over things like residuals.
What has it been like to be a writer for film and screen in the US over the years? Well, in a sense, I think we've covered that already, but they've got to really fight for every morsel of payment now, don't they?
Yeah, and I think that's been for a long time. You know, I think that one of the kind of jokes in the industry is sort of that everyone wants to be a writer. So producers think they can write. So, you know, directors want to rewrite things. Producers often think that they can fix things and make them better. Eventually you'll have actors who kind of hit a point where like they're thinking there's no good parts for me. I have to become a writer. So it's something that everyone wants to do and thinks they can do. But not necessarily something that everyone does well. And I think that contributes to this kind of constant need to prove themselves.
Kate, what are the shows already being impacted or most affected? Clearly all the late night ones.
Yeah, the late night ones. And then there are some shows. So I live in I live in Georgia, which is in the southeast of the U.S., and so which is also the third largest place where things are produced or made in the U.S. So the show that you mentioned, Stranger Things, which is Netflix's biggest show, is not shooting right now, which is a really big deal. One of the kind of Marvel movies, Blade, that was supposed to go into production, is not. Some other streaming shows, something like Severance on Apple Plus, has been down. I think is still probably down. And then some shows that are like U.S. network shows, in particular, off the top of my head, a show called Abbott Elementary, which is a popular show about elementary schools in Philadelphia that's on our network television.
How long will the strike go on? The last one I recall was 100 days.
That's a great question. So I think this one could potentially go through the summer. If the actors go on strike, more things will shut down because you can make things that are done without a writer, but you can't make anything if you don't have actors. So if the actors go on strike at the end of June, this might go faster because they can't make anything.
Kate, thanks for coming on. My guest has been Kate Formell, Assistant Professor of Entertainment and Media Studies at the University of Georgia.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.